This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. I'm your host, Erin Marlowe, and each week I'm joined by a panel of guests to discuss all things fandom and pop culture, primarily from a female perspective. You'll find everything from fanfic to cosplay to Schitt's Creek to Supernatural and everything in between. So put on your favorite piece of fandom merch, set aside that fanfic that you're writing about your OTP, and sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to It's a Fandom Thing. We are continuing our celebration of horror with a discussion about Stephen King. So we're going to talk about books and also adaptations. So this should be fun. It's just me and Paula. Just a quick housekeeping note. Of course, we have a Patreon now. So we are accepting Patreon subscriptions. Accepting. That sounds weird, like we weren't accepting them before or something. But I want to make an announcement. Our Lucifer episode, our first one, we've done two Lucifer episodes. Because of the series ending, our Lucifer episode numbers have drastically just skyrocketed in the past couple of weeks. So because of that, we are going to be doing a special Lucifer episode. We're going to do that first instead of the Stand By Me episode that we've been talking about. And this is going to be a subscriber-only episode. You will get a little preview on the regular podcast, but this is only going to be for Patreon subscribers. So you want to get over there and subscribe so that you can get access to this. It's going to be five panelists and me. So it's going to be a little insane. And two of those panelists are Meg and Carla. So you know it's going to be about a 10-hour episode. So
that'll be awesome.
It's going to be insane. So we're going to just do one just talking about the final season. So that'll be a lot of fun. Okay. So Paula, what are you into right now?
Oh, I actually just finally watched Werewolves Within. Yay! It was great. I loved it.
yay. As everyone knows, we are fans of Josh Rubin on this podcast.
Oh, yes.
So, yes, anything Josh Rubin does, we support. So, yeah, we are his number one fans, not in a creepy, weird way.
No.
not in the misery way. See how it segues into our subject?
Yes.
No, I loved Werewolves Within. We went as a group, and unfortunately Paula couldn't go at that time, but we went as a group to go see it as a podcast group in the theater, and it was a lot of fun. So yeah, it's funny. So definitely, I think it's on sale actually right now to buy too. So definitely go out there. I don't know if it still will be by the time this drops, but go and rent that, support that film, support Josh. And one day Josh will make his Dark Man movie. Putting that out in the universe again. That's his dream project. Awesome. That's his dream. So
that
putting
would be
that
fantastic.
Out there.
That needs that to happen.
Yes. See, it needs to happen. Universe.
Please.
Yeah. And Josh is very supportive of female filmmakers and women behind the scenes, in front of the camera, everything like that. He deserves all the success in the world. So it couldn't have happened to a nicer person. So I'm very happy for him. I'm into Lucifer. I actually got a chance to watch it. I'll save my thoughts for the special podcast episode. I have my thoughts and feelings. That's all I'm going to say. But I'm into Tom Ellis. I love
Who
Tom
isn't?
Ellis. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that guy, yes, he's a great singer. He's a good actor. He's sexy as hell. He's fun. He's nice to watch. And I'm so glad that show moved to Netflix because it was nice to be able to get some butt shots and, you know.
I need to catch up.
Yeah, catch up, Paula. You'll get to see what I'm talking about.
Right?
Okay, so we're going to get into Stephen King now. And I do want to warn our listeners. Okay, I'm going to try and keep this as a very nice episode to Stephen King. But I have said before that I prefer Dean Koontz over Stephen King because I sometimes I think Stephen King gets a little boring. But I'm still excited to talk about this because I think, especially the adaptations, because I think the adaptations of Stephen King novels and novellas have been done so much better than a lot of others have been personally. I know some people think it's either hit or miss, but I actually think his overall are pretty good. So I am excited to talk about this. And there are some books of his that I do genuinely like a lot. So this should be fun. So I want to start off, Paula. So what was the first book you ever read of Stephen King?
Pet Sematary.
Same.
The very first one that I can remember reading.
That's the same for me. Did you love it?
It freaked me out. And it was weird because I went from, I read the book, then I watched the movie, and then I watched it, or I read it, and then I watched the movie. So, and I haven't read or watched either one of them since. Because, look, just, at least in the movie, just little kids in horror movies are just creepy as hell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's just, you know, so, but yeah, that was the first one, and it was good. I have been meaning to go back and watch the movie again. I don't know if I want to read the book again, but I definitely want to see the movie again at some point.
Yeah.
Didn't they remake it?
They did.
As well? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that one was any good or not, but.
I think I'm one of the only people in the world that actually liked it. Must be
okay. It'd be interesting to see them both just to.
Yeah, there's a big change, and I won't say it because I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a big change in the remake of it from the original. Like, and that's one thing that a lot of people had an issue with. So okay, I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want you to be spoiled.
Okay.
I thought it was good, but I understand why people wouldn't like it. But I frankly liked it, so... But okay. Yeah, Pet Sematary was the same for me. And what's interesting about that, and I think I've shared this story before on here, is I finished Pet Sematary. I was a little kid, so I really should not have been, you know, but if, like I've said, I've been watching horror since I was like 5 or 6 years old.
And I saw Poltergeist when I was like 8.
Yeah, my babysitter showed me Poltergeist.
My parents let me watch
it. Your parents did? Yeah, my mom would have never, because my mom doesn't do horror, but... Yeah, my dad used to show me horror movies all the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when my dad showed me Alien for the first time, and I was like about 8 years old probably or something, and I was like, I don't want my dad to know that I'm scared. I don't know, but I was terrified.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we were not really like there weren't really any off-limits movies when we were kids. Like, if there was a lot of, like, bad language or sex scenes, I either had to close my eyes or cover my ears, or they'd made me leave the room for, like, 5 minutes, and then I could come back in and watch the movie. But other than that, they never, you know, I could watch whatever they were watching, so.
Yeah, I mean, I had pretty, not free reign, I wouldn't say, but like I said, I was watching horror movies, and I don't know if my mom was aware of all the horror movies I was watching, but because she doesn't do that, but yeah. But with Pet Sematary, what happened is I knew the movie was coming out, and when I was younger, I used to read a lot more than I do now, and I miss reading. I mean, I used to like set aside time in the morning before I went to school to read. That's how much I read. And I read Pet Sematary right before the original movie came out. And I went to go see Pet Sematary in the theater. And then this is actually a sad story, so I'm sorry. And then like right after that came home, and like my dog had to be put to sleep that night. So it was this weird thing of like reading Pet Sematary, watching Pet Sematary, and then having to put my dog to sleep. Yeah.
Oh.
So even though I like the movie a lot and I actually like that book a lot, it's like this heartbreaking little tie-in for me.
Yeah,
where definitely. It's like our first dog. That was our first dog and smartest dog I've ever known still to this day, Sandy. And so that was a sad story tied to it. And I love the original movie. And we'll talk about that later with the adaptations. But I think that's a really good book. So I'm glad I started with that. Okay, so let's get into favorite books. So what are your favorite Stephen King books? Like, top three.
So my favorites, I really liked the Dark Tower series, like the whole series. There was some parts through there that were kind of a slog to get through, but overall I really liked what he did with that whole series. It was kind of fun to see how he tied all of his other books into it. That was fun. Even though I wasn't familiar with all the books, I remember just I'd be reading the books and I was like, I think that might be something from something else. So I'd get online and I'd look it up to see how it tied in. So that was kind of a fun little treasure hunt kind of a thing. I really liked The Stand. That was another one that one of the genres that I really like is actually more like post-apocalyptic fiction. So that fits right in with what I read a lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then I just recently read 112263, which was not horror. It's more of a time travel. I don't want to give away too much of the plot. But it was more time travel. This guy goes back and he's basically trying to stop the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of lead up to that. But it was actually fascinating. And there was actually a scene in that book. I never thought I'd be able to say this about a Stephen King book, but that there's one particular scene that actually made me cry, which was kind of a huge deal. But yeah, so those I think are probably my top three favorite books or series that he's done.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I've tried with The Stand. I should try it again because I know that was like my dad's favorite book. And so he was always like, you've got to read this book. And I would try and I couldn't get through it. I don't know. It was something about it that would bore me a little bit, but I should try it again.
Well, I mean, I will say this. He does have a habit of taking an entire chapter to say what he could do in a paragraph or two.
Thank you. That's my biggest issue with his books. Yeah.
And when I originally read The Stand, I was in this mindset of I hated abridged versions of books because I'm like, well, why are we cutting out anything that the author put in there? So I borrowed my dad's copy of the unabridged version, which added another 360 pages, I think.
Whoa.
And now I'm of the opinion of, yeah, we could have done without those. It wasn't really necessary to add all of that back in. The editors were right. That needed to be cut. Abridged versions are fine sometimes. So if you do read it, go with the abridged version. It's totally fine. You're not going to miss anything important.
Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Someday I will, you know, whenever I get a free moment, which I don't know when that's going to happen, but someday I will.
Right. Or just watch the original miniseries because it's pretty close to the book.
Yeah. And I didn't watch the new one. No.
Don't bother.
But yeah. That's what I've heard. That's what I've heard. Except for that James Marsden isn't here.
Yeah. He was great. The actors were great. And some of the characters, the way that they portrayed those characters were great. That's not my complaint with that. My complaint is the book and the original miniseries was told in a very linear fashion, and the new miniseries jumped back and forth so badly that even people that knew the story were going, what's going on? It was very disjointed and could be very confusing. And I don't know if that was just an editing thing or if it was just the way they decided to tell it, but I just, it was not good. And that was not any fault of the actors at all. Cause like I said, the for the most part, the actors that they chose and the way they portrayed their characters were great, but I don't think the way they filmed it was the best they could have done. And I know they're probably just doing that maybe to just separate themselves from the original, but I didn't think it worked at all.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I heard it's not worth it. So, well, for me, my three favorite are Pets. I think Pet Sematary is actually a really, really good novel. And that's why I said I'm glad I started with that one because I really enjoyed it. I think Misery is an excellent novel. And the changes they made in the movie, which will, I'm sure we will get to that movie soon. I was okay with, I just think that book is excellent. I think that book is just really one of the best horror novels I have ever read, honestly. And I'm very critical of Stephen King, so that should tell you something. And then the other one is, okay, even though I think the adaptation of this is better, and I think I mentioned this in our book adaptations episode, I think the novel Christine is really good too. With the car. I think that one's really good. I know a lot of people get story crap, but I love that story. I love that movie. So those are my favorite. Those are my top three for sure. Like, those are ones I could definitely see myself revisiting and reading again and enjoying again. So yeah, I really, really, really like those books actually a lot, like a great deal. I think those are some of the best horror novels ever written, honestly. So now we're going to get into the ones we don't like.
Oh, and here's where we're going to disagree on one.
Oh, she's going to list one of my favorites. It's one of my least favorites. Yeah. I'm wondering which one it's going to be.
Oh.
Okay. So, Paula.
Okay. So, Misery was on my least favorite list.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was like, maybe it's going to be Christine, but no. No,
and it was, I mean, I liked the story idea, I know I've seen at least part of the movie, and I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed what I saw of the movie, but mm-hmm. I had a hard time getting through the book because, again, like I said before, he has a very roundabout way of getting to the point of things, and that just made it really hard mm-hmm. for me to get through that book. And that's the only reason why I put it on my least favorites. Not saying that I dislike the book or the story, but that would be on the bottom of my list.
Goodbye. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry. I know.
I'm totally kidding.
It's okay.
Totally kidding.
Lissy's story was another one that I read several years ago. And that one, I just remember that one just being very bizarre. And I don't remember enjoying that one as much. I can't really remember much else about it because I didn't really like it that much.
I don't know anything about that one. Sorry.
I don't really want to say too much more about that one because, like I said, I don't really remember anything else about it except for the fact that I just didn't really like it that much. Maybe I need to revisit that one and see how I like it now. But yeah. And then I've been trying to do, he wrote a book with his son Owen called Sleeping Beauties. Hmm. And I'm still trying to get through it, and I'm just not getting drawn into the story because, again, he either takes, you know, this very circuitous route to get to a point, or he takes forever to get the story going sometimes. And mm-hmm. that's the problem I'm having with this book, where we're taking forever to get the plot going. And I'm just like, I'm listening to the audiobook because that's how I consume a lot of my books now. And I find my mind just wandering as I'm listening to it. And then it's like, okay, wait, what just happened? No, I don't care. I'm sure they'll touch back on that later somehow. Yeah. So I'd say that's another one that I'm not really, I'll probably finish it, but I'm not really enjoying it right now. So, yeah. And I mean, I know I'm being kind of critical of his work, but it's not that I don't enjoy his story ideas. I enjoy his movies, the movies that they do of the adaptations.
Mm, me too.
And, but I think that's just because they're able to edit it down. Cut out a lot of that extra fluff that you don't really need to tell the story. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my issue with Stephen King is I think a lot of his stories are really excellent stories.
Yeah.
At the heart of them. There's really great stories there. Even his ones that aren't horror, like, you know, The Shawshank Redemption, which isn't called The Shawshank Redemption, but that was called Rita Hayworth, and wasn't it Rita Hayworth and something? I can't remember. I
don't remember.
But I think it's something. And then, of course, The Body, which became Stand By Me. And The Green Mile and all that. So there are, you know, great stories in there. It's just, I agree. It's like he has a hard time, you know, because there's that saying in writing, you kill your babies, you kill mm-hmm. your favorite kids. And he has a real hard time doing that, I think.
Yeah.
I think he has a hard time editing himself down. And I'm not saying he's a bad writer, because he's not a bad writer. You can never say Stephen King is a bad writer.
Oh, absolutely.
Even if you
not.
Don't like his books, there's no way you can honestly say that. It's just, I do agree. That's why, like, honestly, the three that I listed as my favorite are I Will Be Frank Here, are really the only ones of his that I've really enjoyed reading. And so, you know, I'm just going to say, you know, The Stand I already mentioned. I don't really, this is going to be something that people are going to hate me for because I know people love this movie too. I'm not a fan of Carrie, and I'm not a fan of the movie version either.
I haven't seen or read the story. Really?
Yeah. You've never seen the original Carrie?
Wow, no, I haven't. Surprises
me. I mean, really, it's something that usually would appeal to me, but I don't know why. And I've watched it more than once. I actually, like I admitted on one of ours, I actually like Rage, Carrie 2, the sequel one that everybody hates. I actually kind of like it. And some of the remakes are okay. I just, and it's nothing to do, because Sissy Spacek is amazing in it. All the performances are amazing. The end scene, the end jump scare is really, truly scary. I don't know what it is about that movie and the story that I just can never connect to. Right. And I'm talking about the original. So that one definitely, and The Stand. So I'm just going to say those because, like I said, I pretty much could name any other one. And that's why it was so weird when I first put this on the schedule, because I was like, Aaron, why are you doing this? But I do like talking about his work because I think there have been so many great movies made from his work. And I still, like I said, the top three I listed are three of my favorite horror novels.
Yeah.
You know, maybe one day Paula will realize her error of the error. Just kidding.
maybe.
But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that's what it is. That's my issue, is it's like, he takes too long to get to something. He doesn't end himself. This is why I like Dean Koontz more, because Dean Koontz to me, Dean Koontz is my favorite writer. So spoiler, I know a lot of people have problems with Dean Koontz. I love Dean Koontz books. And what I love about Dean Koontz books is he gets to the point really quickly. The story starts right away. And he draws these characters. He writes these characters that are so amazing. And this is probably why I think, on the flip side, I think almost all of the adaptations of Dean Koontz books are awful. I think the majority of them are horrible. Some are good or okay, but the majority are not good. Whereas I think Stephen King adaptations are sometimes better than the books. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting little thing there. But Dean Koontz to me writes some of the scariest villains ever. I mean, scarier than any horror movie. And he also, you know, always includes dogs, are very prevalent in a lot of his, because he loves dogs so much. And so I love that about that too, because of that. So not to bring Dean Koontz up too much, I'm just saying comparatively,
sure,
I always, because people compare the two all the time and people are always like, well, Dean Koontz is far inferior to Stephen King. But that's why next year we're going to cover
Dean Koontz.
I think
that's just a personal preference, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but like I said, Stephen King, I would never say is a bad writer. He knows how to write. He knows how to create characters and create interesting stories. And of course, you know, they lead to movie adaptations, which is going to be our next thing to talk about. And before we talk about that, I want to first say we did do a poll. And we did a poll about your favorite adaptations. And I put in there Carrie, The Stand, which we're going to talk about The Stand a little bit because, I mean, not The Stand, I'm sorry, The Shining. Because we're going to talk about that a little bit because, as everybody knows, Stephen King hates the original adaptation of The Shining.
Interesting.
Well, because since it's so far away from his book, you know, he doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's never liked it. And then the other one I put in there was It. And it could have been any version of It. And then I said Other. So it was pretty much a tie between Carrie and, yeah, it was a tie between It and Carrie. Sorry, not. And then also the other Erin, she commented and she mentioned Pet Sematary. So she said it was hard for her to decide between choosing Other and saying the original adaptation of Pet Sematary or saying Carrie. So Paula,
yes,
what are three of your favorite adaptations of Stephen King novels?
Stand by Me is probably my absolute favorite. And I just finished listening to the audiobook today. Love that story. The original Stand miniseries. And this one's going to be, not a lot of people are going to agree with me on this one, but I actually liked the Dark Tower movie.
Oh, really?
Everybody hated it. And I think the reason why everybody hated it was because they were actually expecting it to be the first book, and it wasn't meant to be the first book. That entire series was meant to be a cycle. And the Dark Tower movie was supposed to be the next cycle in the series.
Okay.
And I think when people went to see it, that's not what they were expecting. That's not what they wanted. So they just hated it. And so I didn't see it when it came out in theaters because I heard everybody hated it. It was stupid. It was horrible. But I'm like, but Idris Elba.
Well, I mean,
come on. I mean, but I heard how bad it was, so I didn't go see it because I didn't want to be so disappointed. And then I started reading up on it, and I just recently watched it a few weeks ago, and I was like, okay, I can see why everybody hated it, but it's not bad. I kind of like it because I see what they were doing, and they were setting up the next cycle, which was supposed to be a series, a television series or a mini series. And I think because it got so badly hated, they canceled the series, which is kind of sad because that was supposed to be the final cycle of the whole thing. Yeah. And then honorable mention, because I haven't actually read the story, but Green Mile. That was a fantastic movie that makes me cry every time. But
yeah, like we said on our book adaptations episode, if you don't cry at that movie, you don't have a heart.
Right. You know, I'm just going to say this because I think honestly, and this might get me some hate, but I actually think his non-horror stories are his better stories.
I think actually there might be a lot of people that would agree with you on that.
Honestly. I think they're better. And I think those are the ones that he doesn't taking so long to get to the point or, you know, expounding too much on what he's saying. I think those stories are just more concise for whatever reason than the horror books. And they're just, I think they're better told stories.
No, that makes sense. Well, I know Paula maybe doesn't even like the adaptation of it, but Misery, I think, is one of the best. Did you like the adaptation of that, at least?
I haven't seen the whole movie, but what I have seen, I did like, yes. I know. I know.
My job.
I know. Because let me tell you, well, because I listened to the audiobook, and the whole time, it's James Caan and Kathy Bates in my head in those characterizations, so...
Well, I think Misery was great. And I'll just try and name ones that Paula didn't name because I would name probably not the Stand miniseries, but I would name the other two for sure, Stand By Me and Green Mile. I think those are excellent, as is Shawshank. So I'm not going to name those. I'll just stick with the horror on mine just to spread it out a little. But yeah, Misery for sure. I think Christine is an absolutely wonderful, amazing film. I will defend that film forever. I know people hate that movie. I love that movie. I think it is excellent. I think John Carpenter did an amazing job. It's an amazing skill and an amazing feat to make a movie about a car that kills people. Pretty incredible.
Right.
And to make it, in my opinion, kind of scary. And maybe it's scary to me because I saw it when I was young, but I still think I still think it holds up. So I think that's really good. I think recently, one of the best horror movies to come out in the last decade, because Mike Flanagan, I wanted to say Mike Flanagan is one of the best horror creators around today, and he does really good Stephen King adaptations like Gerald's Game, which is a movie I could never watch again, but it's really good. But he did Dr. Sleep, which is the sequel to The Shining. And I think Dr. Sleep is an amazing, amazing movie. I think Rose the Hat is one of the most terrifying villains I've ever seen on screen. I think Ewan McGregor is amazing in the movie. I think, and I should have written her name down, the girl who plays the little girl is really good too. Did you see this movie?
No, I need to see that one.
It is so, so good. It's on HBO Max right now, I think.
Okay.
And I think it's actually the director's cut. But it's
better.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so, so, so good. And I remember when I saw it with my sister, and when it was over, my sister's like, that is one of the best movies I have seen in a long, long time. I just think it's just amazing, hands down. So I had to mention that one. So those are my three. I definitely would give, you know, like, I think the old It and the new It, I think they're both good. Of course, Tim Curry will always be the better.
Oh, version. I mean, anything that Tim Curry has done, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, but I still think that who was that who played that? He's one of the Skarsgård.
I was gonna say one of the Skarsgård.
What the heck is this? I still think he was really good, and I think Bill Hader was amazing in the second one. I thought Bill Hader was incredible as the grown up version. So you know, I think those are good, and you know, I want to just talk about The Shining briefly, just because The Shining is an interesting movie to look at because it's considered a classic horror movie. We are in Colorado, and I just want to say, I have never been to the Stanley. Have you ever been to the Stanley?
I haven't been inside, no. I want to.
I know. Well, actually, Bruce...
They do ghost tours there yeah. all the time, mm-hmm. and that would be fun to do.
But yeah, I've never been. I want Bruce Campbell. They're having a Bruce Fest coming soon, and I wish it wasn't so expensive because right now I don't have very much disposable funds at the moment.
Right.
Because everything goes to this.
That would be amazing to go to.
Yeah, I would love to go to that. But anyway, but as people may famously know, Stephen King is not a fan of Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. He, of course, went on to remake The Shining as a TV miniseries. And Stephen King was very much involved in that one. He was not involved in Stanley Kubrick's version. I recently saw The Shining on the big screen before COVID. So it was, I think it was like in 2019 that I saw it on the big screen because they were bringing it back. It was right before Dr. Sleep. And I still think it's really good. I think it's terrifying. I think, you know, Jack Nicholson is great and superb. And I think Shelley Duvall is amazing, even though she was treated horrendously by Stanley Kubrick. I mean, Stanley Kubrick was not a nice director. And he was notorious for taking forever because he would do shot after shot after shot and exhaust everybody. So I want to know, what are your thoughts on The Shining? And do you understand? Because I want to say really quickly, the reason Stephen King has an issue with it is because The Shining for him, there's a lot of things that they change from the book. I mean, the ending is totally different.
Oh, okay.
And they miss a lot of the points that a lot of what the novel was about is Stephen King talking about his own dad, like his own struggles with alcoholism and his own, and that kind of stuff. So, and he felt that was really missing from the adaptation. And that it didn't seem to have that heart to it. It just seemed to be like, you didn't slowly watch Jack Nicholson. You didn't slowly watch Jack Torrance getting crazier and crazier. He just already was. And right. he hated that. And so I want to know, do you like The Shining? Do you like Stanley Kubrick's The Shining?
I did like it, yeah, when I saw it. I haven't read the book, so now I'm really interested to read the book and see what the differences are and then see the new version. Because I had heard that he disliked it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's I can see why he didn't like it if that's his reasoning. Because, yeah, there was no slow buildup to
the
crazy at all. It was just like that. Mm-hmm. So I can understand that. But yeah, that makes me actually interested now to read the book. So I may have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, I like it a lot, but it's hard sometimes to watch that also with the thought in the back of my mind of how horribly Shelley Duvall was treated on that set.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people, you know, criticize that performance too and say she wasn't good. I think she is outstanding in that movie. I think she's so good.
I thought she was fantastic, so and now knowing now how badly she was treated, a lot of that performance is probably real.
Yeah,
you know, very real emotion because of the treatment that she was experiencing. Because he was monstrous to her.
Oh my gosh, yeah, he was so horrible to her. And there's this interview that she recently did, you know, because she's kind of gone off the grid. And it's this beautiful interview and very respectful of her and doesn't treat her like a sideshow freak kind of thing, for lack of a better term, because I think a lot of people kind of want to treat her that way.
Yeah.
And I really recommend, I wish I could remember who wrote it. I think it was for Vanity Fair. Was it for Vanity Fair?
I think it was. Yeah. Cause I've read it too. It was really good.
So good. So go try and find that and read that because, you know, I mean, she's a very interesting human being. And it makes me sad. So there's that part of me that kind of is watching it like, maybe I shouldn't be watching this because of the way she was treated. But what's interesting with Dr. Sleep is, since that is a sequel, you know, it's a sequel to, it's showing Danny Torrance as an adult, as Ewan McGregor is playing him. And they actually combined the story. So even though Stephen King likes that and he was involved in it, he went, I understand we have to kind of bring, because everybody knows that story. So he kind of allowed like bits from that one. They had to have actors playing the characters, but they kind of interspersed that. You'll see when you watch the movie. But for everyone who's seen it, you probably know that they have like scenes with Jack Torrance with an actor that's supposed to look like Jack Nicholson, and then a couple of other things like that they recreate. Okay. They recreate, like, I believe they have the bicycle scene, you know, with Danny riding his bike. So that's interesting. Is I don't know if, I mean, I can't remember. I know Stephen King spoke about this. I think it was actually at the Shining thing. They like had a tape of him talking about it, that about Dr. Mm-hmm. Sleep. We're doing like a little clip preview of it before the Shining. And I know he still does not like it, but I think he's made some kind of peace with it, is what I get the feeling. Plus, right. Like I said, Mike Flanagan, he knows how to adapt Stephen King books. I mean, mm-hmm. and plus he's a really, really good horror filmmaker. If you want to watch some really good horror, I highly recommend him. He knows how to do horror. So go watch the movie Oculus, which is not a very well-known horror movie. He also did the movie Hush, which is, I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but that's a really good one too. Those are some lesser known titles of his, but yeah, he's really good. So highly recommend him.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I want to ask, what are your least favorite adaptations?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is the new Stand miniseries, which, for reasons I've discussed before.
Yeah.
Under the Dome. I tried to watch that. Now, I haven't read the book. I think I got about 10 minutes into that one and went, what is this? This is ridiculous. it's stupid. And then my dad tried to watch it as well, and he watched it, and he told me the story, and I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I stopped watching that, because it's dumb.
I'm one of the only people in the world that liked that.
Maybe I need to give it another try, but yeah.
No, everybody hates it. I liked it. Everybody hates it.
I don't know what it was. I just couldn't go on with that one. And I can't think of any other ones right now. But I really have a hate for the Stand.
A lot of people do.
Rightly so. I'm sorry, but rightly so. That one was just terrible.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So I was looking for adaptations of Stephen King novels that I hadn't watched in a while to watch. And this little gem of a movie.
Oh, no.
I don't know if you've seen this. Sleepwalkers. Have you seen Sleepwalkers?
I don't think so, no.
I'm watching this and I'm like, because I remember seeing this as a little kid in the movie theater. And I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, my gosh. How did I ever watch this movie? Or how did this ever get made? Because trigger warning here for incest people. So Sleepwalkers is about these creatures. They're like mm-hmm. sleepwalkers. They're kind of like, I wouldn't say they're like not really like skinwalkers, although it might be accused of being like that. But, and like cats like can attack them and kill them and stuff, are like the only animals that really see who they are. So they walk around like people. They look like people, but they're actually like these weird creatures. Mm-hmm. And it's this mother and son, and they have this incestuous relationship. And like, you see them have sex. Like, they have a sex scene between them.
Do they really need to do that?
I'm like, did we need to see this? Like, it's a very graphic sex scene. They kiss, they dance, all this stuff. And I'm watching this movie.
Oh, my God.
And I remember I wrote out on Facebook, I'm like, I forgot how messed up this movie is. So I say that because, and, you know, it's one of those, too, that, like, okay, so, like, he's trying to, I'm sorry, I'm going to totally spoil this for
That's
you, Paula.
Fine,
so
spoilers, I don't think I want to see this one.
It's on Hulu if you want to watch it, everybody.
I don't think I really want to.
And so his mom is sick or dying or something. She needs to feed. Like, they never really explain a lot. Like, everything just happens really quickly in this movie. Mm-hmm. And so they've moved to a new town because they have to move after they kill a bunch of people. And the son is in high school. He's like a high school kid. And so he's supposed to be befriending this other teenage girl to basically bring her home to his mom to feed on, kind of thing, like feed on her soul. Yeah. So you're thinking this will be a slow buildup. They'll have a relationship and then he might even question it, whatever. Well, no, they go on one date and then he instantly starts attacking her and then she like attacks him back. So it's like there's no buildup in this movie. It just like goes straight to that.
Wow, and there's amazing.
Never and there's never like this question of like the son is never like, maybe I shouldn't be, you know, maybe what my mom is doing with me isn't right. Maybe we shouldn't be sleeping with each other, but maybe it's just a sleepwalker thing.
I mean, wow.
That's so messed
that's
up.
That's bizarre.
It's so messed up. It's so horrible. Wow. Oh my gosh. It's so so there you go, everybody. If you want to watch something with incest, which I'm not encouraging you to want to watch.
Yeah. That I mean, and they really so filmed disturbing. That scene.
Oh my God. I was like watching like this really came out in theaters. Like it was like one of those like that was marketed to teen audience. It was
are you serious?
I remember I was younger. I was like preteen, I think, or something. Yeah, they marketed it to that.
You would think, especially at that time, that would not have gotten past the censors without like an NC-17 rating just for that.
Yeah, and it, I mean, granted, it's not like the most graphic sex scene I've ever seen at all, but it's the fact that they actually had the sex scene.
Yeah, because they slapped an NC-17 on movies for far less than that.
Oh, yeah, it was, I was watching it like, and I should have looked on IMDb to see any trivia and see if that was a big deal back then, because I was like, seriously? So, and one of my friends said, you need to listen to the podcast episode of how the fuck did this get made? You know, that podcast, just because I guess they do an episode on it, because it makes sense to do an episode on it, because I'm watching it like, how in the world did this ever, I don't know how it ever got made. But anyway, so I think that's actually the worst, just because I think the movie is so, it's so terrible. The other one I wanted to mention, oh, this was not too long ago on Netflix, Into the Tall Grass, this movie In the Tall Grass, which poor Patrick Wilson. I think Patrick Wilson is amazing and he's a great addition to the horror family. I know he does other things, but he's a great addition to that. We're going to be covering the Conjuring series and Insidious coming up in October. And I'm very excited about that. I just rewatched Insidious in preparation and I still think Insidious has hands down the best title sequence of any horror movie in recent years. But Patrick Wilson can't even save this movie. And it's based on a novella by Stephen King, and it's called In the Tall Grass. And it's like I can't even remember because it was so bad, but it was laughable. Like I laughed a lot, like when you weren't supposed to be. And I'll read the description, but I think a lot of people agree on this. I don't think it's a very widely liked one. This is just the synopsis. When siblings Becky and Cal hear the cries of a young boy lost within a field of tall grass, they venture in to rescue him only to become ensnared themselves by a sinister force that quickly disorients and separates them. And then they meet all these other families within the tall grass. And you know, I will admit one of my biggest fears in the world is like cornfields and big things like that and big open fields. And actually one of the first times I love horror, but it took me forever to go to a haunted house. Like I've been scared to death to go to them. And I didn't go to my first one until like, it was like 2019. And one of the first, and it was like three different things. And one of them was going through a corn maze. Oh my gosh, was I terrified. Anyway.
I'm not a fan of haunted houses and mazes and things like that. No.
Yeah. See, I can watch horror movies forever. But like I think Children of the Corn is legitimately terrifying because I think scary kids are, like you said before, they're so scary. Like, I don't know if you're watching the new season of American Horror Story, which we are doing live tweets of every Thursday, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on Twitter. But there's an evil child in there. Like, she's so creepy in the new season, or the first part of the new season since this double feature. But anyway, yeah, this movie is horrible. So I'll just mention those two because they're so bad that I've kind of forgotten about every other one. But I did want to give a quick shout out again to this is a good one. I think The Mist is really fantastic. I think The Mist is one of the best.
I haven't seen it yet. I love the book.
Oh, it's so good. And this is a movie that, like I've said, my mom doesn't do horror movies. Well, this was around my birthday.
Are you talking the original or the newer one? Because there's two.
There's two ones? I thought there was only one.
I think there's two.
I'm talking about the one that came out in like 2007.
Because I think there was either I think there was either a movie or a miniseries several years ago.
Oh, there was a TV series in 2017. That's right. Yeah. I never watched the TV series, but no, The Mist that came out in 2007. Yeah. Because once again, that was Frank Darabont, who of course did Shawshank and Green Mile. So he knows how to do Stephen King as well. Mm-hmm. So I think him and Mike Flanagan are the best at adapting Stephen King. But my mom, like I said, doesn't do horror movies. Well, it was around my birthday and she's like, you know what? I want to go to a horror movie with you because I want to see what it's like going to a horror movie with you. And I went, well, this one she might be able to handle. And yeah. She went and saw it and she liked it. And so, and she doesn't remember this. I tell my mom, she's like, I didn't go see that. I'm like, yes, you did. And for me, it holds a very special place in my heart because sure. of that, because I got to experience that with my mom and I've never experienced watching a horror movie with my mom before. And granted, this one I think is a lot easier for someone mm-hmm. to watch that's not into horror. But it's so beautifully heartbreaking. It's such a heartbreaking story. I mean, the ending is so tragic. And I just think it's so well done. So I just want to give a quick shout out to that because it holds a special place in my heart, even though my mom doesn't remember this. It's like this special memory. And she's like, well, I'm glad it's special for you. She's like, I probably blocked it because it's horror.
Now, have you read the book for The Mist?
I actually haven't.
Okay. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody else, but I know that for that movie, they did change the ending.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't seen that one yet. That's why I was asking which version you had seen. So,
yeah. But that's interesting. Yeah, I've heard that. And I've heard, and I think actually for the film one, they actually filmed a couple of different endings.
Interesting.
So I think they might have actually filmed that one. And then like Frank Darabont really fought hard for the ending that they have in there. So that's interesting. Okay. Well, what I want to know is, are there any books, Paula, or any books that have been adapted that you want to see a different adaptation for, or a better adaptation, or just ones that haven't been adapted?
Well, like I said before, you know, with the Dark Tower series, they did the movie and then they canceled the TV series that was supposed to come after that, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of disappointed about now, knowing what was the plan. So I wish that somebody would, you know, pick that up again and continue with that. Other than that, the Talisman, I'd like to see that one done. And I just recently finished The Institute, and that one was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that would be an interesting one to see them do an adaptation of. I don't know if you're familiar with that one at all.
I've heard of but I don't remember it too well, but I am familiar with it, even though.
So it's
you looked hesitant to tell me about it, but no, tell me about it.
I don't want to give too much of it away. Yeah. So basically The Institute, they take kids that have special gifts and okay. use those gifts, if you will, but I won't say why. Some of them escape.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And the Talisman's interesting because it's kind of the main character. I can't remember his name because it's been a while since I've read that one. He kind of shifts between worlds. So you have, mm-hmm. you know, like this world, and then there's an alternate world where you have almost like a doppelganger. So if most people will have a twin, I guess, in the other world, and he doesn't have one, so he can physically change from this world to the other. And he kind of goes on a quest to save his mother and the queen of this other world. And it's very interesting. It's kind of like an epic quest, and it's that would be an interesting one to see them do an adaptation of.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah. You know, I tried to think about this one a lot and it was hard for me to think of one, but I think actually, you know, what might be kind of interesting, even though it's already been adapted a couple times and everything, I think you could make Pet Sematary into a series. Like you could talk about like, and it wouldn't even necessarily have to be just following like, you know, just every episode is after the other episode. Like you could do like little chunks of like, you know, the first animal buried there and the first human buried there, like going into those more in depth. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be kind of an interesting series. I wouldn't say movie, but more like a mini series or something, like maybe on Hulu or Netflix or something like that. That just kind of hit me that might be kind of an interesting thing to watch. Mm-hmm. And even though I very, I hesitate to say this because I'm going to put it out in the world and it's going to happen. It's going to be horrible. I think it would be interesting to do a Misery story now set in present day, like not set back in the time of the novel, but I think it might be kind of interesting to do that. Maybe not even with a novelist being the person, like you could do like a blogger or something like that, you know, or, you know, like a YouTube star or something. I'm not going to say podcaster because I don't know what that but I just think that might be kind of an interesting update to it. And I hesitate to say that because I'm like, it'll probably happen. It'll be awful. But I just think that might be kind of an interesting thing to do a redo on.
Yeah.
And maybe Paula will like it.
I think it could be. I think that would be an interesting take on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, because now with technology so different, I just wonder if there would be different ways to try and outsmart Annie. And even if you had it like, you know, because in Castle Rock, in the second season of Castle Rock was very much about Annie Wilkes before she became, I mean, she was still, you know, horrible, but I don't know if you watched Castle Rock at all. It's actually, this first season was really good. I never finished the second season, but the second season is about Annie Wilkes. I mean, it's other people as well, but she's one of the main characters in there. But it's young Annie Wilkes.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Which they touched on just a little bit in the novel.
Yeah. So it's more a stretched out version of that. So they did that. So they kind of did it there. But I think just having one where it is an updated version where, it, you know, you have more of the technology of today and seeing if that would factor in at all, you know?
Right.
I don't know. Like a different kind of celebrity taken. I don't know. Just a thought I had. It doesn't mean it has to be made Hollywood. It just means that it might be kind of interesting. I don't know.
But if it is made, we have a couple of directors that would do good at it.
That's true. You know, Frank, yes.
You know, as you've said before, that they do really good adaptations.
Yes. Yes. If you had Frank Darabont do it, Mike Flanagan, I mean, they could probably do justice. So
yeah, they could probably pull it off.
We'll put that out there. That if you're going to do it, you have to tap one of them. Okay. Not the Sleepwalkers director. Right.
Yeah. If we're going to put it out there, we need to put it out there with parameters.
That's very true. Very good point there. Yes. Because, you know, speaking of remakes, this is totally not Stephen King, but you know, it was announced today, or well, since this is dropping Wednesday, it would have been on this past Friday. They're remaking The Lost Boys.
Why?
Exactly. I have a very, very hard time with this because I know they've done sequels that I've never watched, but The Lost Boys is like, if you were a child in the 80s, this is, you don't touch this movie.
No, there are some movies you just don't touch.
This is very upsetting to me. I had the poster for The Lost Boys above my bed. I just recently saw it at the drive-ins this summer. And this movie is so special. So I know I just said these remakes, but I just want to put that out there that this was not a good idea.
No.
And who knows, maybe it'll be good, but no, I mean, come on. Who are you going to get to play Kiefer Sutherland's character? I mean, come on. Unless, I mean, I didn't read the whole thing because it was pretty much right before we started recording that I just saw that and I went, no.
No, but nobody asked for this.
Yeah, there are some things you just don't touch. We totally got off on a tangent there, but it kind of goes with it. So, yeah. Well, this has been fun, and it's a short episode, and the editor in me is very happy about this.
Can I just throw out one thing though?
Yes,
I
please.
I did read his book on writing, which was actually really great. It was the first part of it was like a memoir, and the second half was more like writing workshop.
Oh, really?
So anybody that's interested in like kind of that side of things, really great. I mean, I would, yeah, we've been kind of critical of his writing and whatnot, but that doesn't mean that I wouldn't still love to sit in a room and chat with him because, you know, it would be great. And so, if you're interested in all in, you know, his story or, you know, how he writes and whatnot, and any, you know, like writing advice and whatnot, that's a great book.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I mean, like I said, even though I'm critical of his books, it doesn't mean that he's not a good writer and that you couldn't learn from something from him as a writer. I think he would be someone that, I mean, I don't know if he'd come on here after me being critical of his writing, I would love to interview him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. We'll go ahead and we're going to wrap up this episode, which, like I said, once again, my editor brain loves it when we have short episodes. I love talking for a long time, but I'm very fortunate. I really feel very blessed and lucky. And so I just want to thank people that have been on this podcast in the past, helped it all, including you, Paula, who has been my right-hand woman for our horror trivia event that's still going on. I just want to just say, thank you to anyone who listens to this and everybody that has shown me support through this. This is, you know, I know this is weird to throw this out on a Stephen King episode, but I just feel very blessed and fortunate right now in my life. And so thank you so much, everybody. And thank you, Paula. And seriously, because I've loved that you've been on so many episodes recently, Paula. I want to say that it's been such a treat because I think you have a lot of great things to say. So thank you for coming on. And really thank you from the bottom of my heart for the horror trivia thing, because like people can witness, there's no way we would be so screwed right now. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And it's been a lot of fun to be on the podcast with you. And thank you for giving all of us the opportunity to come on here and give our opinions on all of these things. It's been a lot of fun for us. And we see your passion and we share that passion. That's why we want to do this with you. So
awesome. Well, thank you. That means a lot. Okay. So Paula, let everybody know where they can find you.
Okay. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at It's My Sandbox.
Awesome. Thank you. And this is Erin. You can follow me on Twitter at eAprilBeauty. The E and the A and the B are capitalized. I haven't been very active on there because I finished Gilmore Girls, thank God. I've kind of slowed down on my Darren Criss tweets, everybody, but he is releasing a Christmas album or released it or something. And I'm like, I'm still in my horror mood, but I'm going to get that. I guess he has one that's signed. So if anybody wants to get me a birthday present, there you go. But I'm still very much into Finn Wittrock's beautiful, gorgeous hair. I know that sounds really weird, but it's so gorgeous. Be sure to like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/itsafandomthingpod, on Twitter at fandomthingpod. No, it's in that one, on Instagram at itsafandomthingpod. If you have any feedback, show notes, if you'd like to be a potential interview guest on the show, feel free to reach out to us at itsafandomthingpod@gmail.com. Since this is dropping on Wednesday, so if you're only listening to this on Wednesday during the day or the night, this applies. But we are doing night 4 of our horror trivia event is tonight at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So that's 6 Pacific, 8 Central, and 9 Eastern. I know that's late for Eastern people, but we are doing night 4, which is aliens. So that'll be a lot of fun. But we're going to have Cameron from Green Shirt Podcast, which is a podcast that talks about Star Trek. So he's going to be on. So that's going to be our guest on that one. So, and then the other Erin will be on that one. So the other Erin who designed our amazing horror logo, which once again, if you want some merchandise with our horror logo, go to our Redbubble store. I love our horror logo so much that it's so hard for me to think about giving it up. Soon. I'm like, I don't want to go back. I love the other one too, but I just love it. Anyway, but so that'll be happening then. And then, so keep a lookout also for all the other nights. So we've got, there's 10 nights of them. So we're coming up on night 4. So there's still a bunch to go. So it'll be a lot of fun. I want to give a big correction. We were going to have our queer horror episode was going to be our next episode. Well, because I really want Roman and Tyler to be on that. Roman Tyler, who directed Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street. Also go listen to our interview with them because I love those guys so much. Well, we've had to reschedule things. So that one's not dropping on Friday. Instead, we're going to have our interview we did with Midian Crosby, Monster Midian Effects out of Atlanta. So she does special effects. She's worked on like The Walking Dead and The Haunting of Hill House, speaking of Mike Flanagan, and a bunch of other things. She's incredibly, incredibly talented. She is also an incredibly talented chef. And she, like I said, she's out of Atlanta. I've known her. I went to high school with her. So that's how I know her. But it's a really good interview. So that will be dropping on Friday instead. That was going to be the week after, but it's going to be dropping on Friday. So just to let you know, that's a little change in our schedule. So then the following week, we will have Queer Horror followed by our Candyman episode. So it should be a lot of fun. And then we're going to get into the supernatural episodes or the paranormal episodes, I should say, so people don't get confused. but the paranormal horror episodes and then the slasher horror episodes. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very excited. We're all about horror. So until next time, remember, it's a fandom thing. Black Lives Matter and stop Asian hate.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.